That's Uranus and Taurus, team. That's what's coming alive to be unlocked there. Let me just do it one more time for the stragglers. All right. Okay, we're beginning with this very serious animation of Uranus and Taurus. All right. And that's kind of perfect. Modern technology bringing ancient things alive. My first understanding of Taurus, right, the circle with the horns on top, we think of it as the bull, but why is Venus exalted? Why is it so feminine? But in the cave paintings, it's clear from context that the circle is the womb and the horns are the fallopian tubes coming into it. So really, Taurus poses the question, why be born? Why bother? Why does creation bother to create? And Taurus says, for pleasure. For the whole yum of incarnational sensuality. I think of Taurus as the most sensually intelligent of the signs, meaning everything is food, smell, taste, touch, texture, yum, yum, yum. And that people can starve from aesthetic deprivation as much as caloric. One of the things that James Hillman and I cooked up is the opposite of aesthetic is anesthetic, right? So either we have a living sense of beauty or we're asleep, which means there's no solution to anything without beauty. And so here's the kind of Taurus dynamic. So I have the chart of now, which is fun. So I will buy the tapes, the recordings of all of my colleagues this morning, but I was absolutely riveted by watching the live coverage of the March for Our Lives in Washington. It was like weeping, just weeping for the powerful beauty of it. And so much of, you know, what I said last night about transforming trauma into my dangerous, beautiful assignment, oh man, they are really doing that. The embodied power of dynamic grief. It's like, what a fuel. And apparently, if we can tap into that, it's a renewable fuel. Right, so we go, that's so powerful, the Parkland youth. And it's true, you know, by comparison, you know, Stormy Daniels seems a small thing, a small little, after dinner mint, comparatively, tomorrow's festival, really. But once again, I admire her. I mean, in the whole Twitter feed, sometimes Twitter makes you proud to be human when you're tapping into collective intelligence. And we go, oh, it's really good. Because she was also commenting, you know, full support for the Parkland youth, you know, and it was so powerful. And then somebody was saying, you know, you're an ugly whore and no man would marry you. And she's like, ha, ask my incredibly satisfied husband. Anyway, so it's like, go Stormy. See, again, under all that, and let me see if I can, patience with me as I play with these things. I just want to, as Jung said, we don't want to impose mythology on mere human beings because it forces them to their fatal conclusion, Jung said in his characteristically grumpy Capricorn rising kind of way. One of the clearest examples was Princess Di. You know, and so when Princess Di died, you know, a lot of news people kind of called me because they go, there's so many spooky symbolic, we need Coyote Network News to decode this. So Princess Di, you know, a Cancer, Diana, incarnation of the moon, mother of the solstice king, you know, she dies on an eclipse under, you know, while being chased underneath the Place d'Armes in Paris, sacred to Haiti, and it goes on and on kind of like that. And the outpouring of grief, you know, and her generosity, and I mean, we humans are all befoibled, her generosity, but the outpouring of grief was as though the moon goddess had died, right? And so it's too much. It's part of why I'm in favor of National Return to Birth Name Day, just in case, you know, that calling oneself Shakti or day, you know, whatever is, you know, just give it a break for a day, just for the fun of it, just to give your psyche room to recover from the impositional quality of it. So I do want to Let's see, that's right. Okay, they're not that thing, not that thing. Okay, here. Just for the symmetry, though, so we can see how these transits kind of work. Daniels. Right, okay, so I'm going to bring Stormy Daniels' chart for the fun of it into. Can you see the chart now? Okay, and so her chart is inside, right? And the transits are outside. Why, look at this. Neptune at 14 Pisces, her Mars at 14 Pisces. It's an appointment with destiny. You know, and you know, let's think of Neptune in a big way as how a culture tells itself its own story. So, you know, we know Neptune, you know, in the 1920s, Neptune and Leo, the Roaring Twenties, you know, and the fall of 1929, Virgo, party's over. You know, but so Neptune in its own home realm of Pisces, as I said last night, the way I think of it, feel it, you know, is as though all the critters backstage are meeting and saying, what are we going to do about the humans? Kill them or heal them? We'll try healing them first. You know, let's make, you know, Neptune and Pisces, especially with the Jupiter stationing going back to trine it, you know, there's a phrase in the pattern on the trestle board. It begins by saying, all the power that ever was or will be is here now. And with this, we say, all the stories and metaphors that ever were or will be are here now. You know, to each one of us, by our affinity, to bring alive and to lob back into the Piscean Neptune realm of collective mind, right? Purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. And watching the March for Our Lives, 500,000 people, right, in D.C. So that's my home. I live there. But it's like, but I was watching it going, you know, there's a small Piscean, like, boo-hoo, I should be there. It's like, no, boo, you know, alhamdulillah, I'm here with a team of pragmatic mystics to connect with that. We're all in telepathic kahoot. And it was, again, weeping for beauty. Each person who spoke, and I took copious notes, might bring up some of them, but so powerful, so eloquent, so completely right on. 11-year-olds, you know, 12-year-olds, 18-year-olds, and we do want to revisit, you know, a lot of the Parkland youth all coming alive like a positive sleeper cell. You know, that. So when we look at 2000, a lot of them born 2000, the seniors, you know, who first began to come to prominence, and then 11-year-olds and everything. And also connected to Martin Luther King, many young people, the 11 and 18, were quoting Martin Luther King saying, we have come here to make his dream real. Now, Saturn is quintile Neptune right now, right? So to make the abstract, you know, incarnationally real, to invite and magnetize the positive all-inclusive dream, they're doing a great job of that. So I think of, you know, for each one of us, you know, by our affinity to go, you know, what story wants me to tell it? And you know, for instance, I really do think everything's alive. It's my default setting. And that includes stories and myths. And we have affinities. And I love the woman, Evangeline Walton, who did my favorite translation of the Mabinogion, the Welsh Arthurian legends that are so full of passion and depth and underworld and betrayal and beauty and love. And it's a 5-book series. I found it on a remaindered table, right, and was like, oh, I wonder what this is. Life-changing material. And then the story of it is also just great in brief, that Evangeline Walton published 2 of the books and nobody noticed. And then several decades later, this publisher found them and was like, this is dazzling. I mean, the writing is dazzling. And she was before the internet. She couldn't find the author. And she thought, well, I'm going to bring them back into print. And then she finally found the author, a woman living alone in a small town in Missouri. Right? And she said, do you have the other 3 books? She goes, I do. And they were published, and this woman, you know, reached great acclaim in her late 70s. but it's the mystery going, why did the Mabinogion choose her? And how did she, living alone in a small town in Missouri, know so much about the powerful depth of human emotion and betrayal and love? And we go, and she said she always loved it since she was a little girl. And it was clear that the Mabinogion chose her, right? And in that same way, you know, for all of us to feel like, what story, what teaching, what domain of the whole Jupiter realm of education, you know, hums to us. It's also, you know, intriguing, of course, that in Jupiter in Scorpio, retrograde is all about, you know, we can read all these things on 800 levels, right? Education and death, right? And that's the Parkland Youth. I do not want to fear learning. I do not want to fear face death in order to learn. And there were people reporting in from all over Malala, and I have all their charts. I don't know if we have time to put everything up, but there's this fantastic pattern tracking resonance. And we go, ooh, truly it is a confluencing of allies right now. As we are here, and we're here in telepathic cahoots with all that is good. So that was just incredibly, remarkably powerful. But so even just on this level of, you know, looking at the coinciding, I love Neptune at 14 Pisces and Stormy Daniels Mars at 14 Pisces, and you know, it's been there and retrograded back, but this is the first time in 165 years, and it says something about her Mars, you know, is connecting with the large dream in some crucial way. And also, if I ever get into trouble, I want her lawyer. It's like, man, he's like no-nonsense, you know, advocate, incredibly intriguing. But just for the fun of it, remember the March 17th new moon was at 26 Pisces, and that was, you know, Stormy's birthday, 26 plus Pisces. Just for the whimsy of it, you know, the Sabian symbol for that is a vision of peace. You know, and I would love to, you know, I'm putting out little feelers to Stormy Daniels going, want to talk mythology? You know, want to take it in a whole other different conversation? I bet you do, you know, because you're a Pisces, for goodness sake. And I like, you know, well, being, you know, the rambunctious trickster I am, I don't so much go for fall and detriment. You know, everything has its place. People are custodians of different part of this beautiful language. But I say, you know, if somebody's born a Pisces, I'd say the old language would say ruled by Jupiter and Neptune, but I prefer you are incarnation, incarnational agent for Jupiter and Neptune. Or you're an Aries, old language says ruled by Mars, I go incarnation of Mars or agent. So we go, well, that's fun. So a Pisces, we say incarnation of Jupiter, and we go, okay, where's Jupiter? And we go, look, it's at the last degree of Cancer. This is just a solar chart for noon, right? But I like noon charts quite a lot. Sometimes they're really, and it's great because it puts Jupiter in Cancer, you know, in the first house, and she's got enormous knockers, right? Just, you know, and the Cancer glyph really is, you know, the bosomy thing. And we go, Jupiter exalted. And we go, boy, is it, you know, wow, huge. But also, you know, just as a kind of visual contributor, she is not ashamed. She's a shame-proof person, apparently. I mean, knock on wood. But, you know, and, you know, talking to many women, everything going on now, too. And, you know, this wonderful dancer healer I met at the Monroe Institute, French. And she goes, I talk to these women who want to be actresses and models, and they all walk like this because they're embarrassed about their breasts, you know. And she said, it's so American, right? She go, and it also has to do with the complexities of the whole erotic equality conversation. She goes, in France, we women learn how to be self-possessed, to have an energetic field, and part of what contributes to that is flirting. Ritualized flirtation creates a boundary in a game. It's like the dances, the tango dances, which are ritualized flirtation between men and women. And one of the purposes of art was always to ritualize so one need not literalize. And I think as social strategists, just for the fun of it, you know, what we're all heading into, because we know that we humans have set in motion incredible disharmony in the weather patterns and much injustice, all kinds of stuff coming at us. But remember, great Pisces Edgar Cayce, you know, in the 30s and 40s predicted that in the 1970s there would be a great flood that ravaged the east coast of America. And what we got was Watergate, right? So it's like on what level? So I want us as wizards and alchemists to be engaged in experimental, without hubris, without causation, without deriving status, just humbly, you know, negotiating backstage, going, oh, nature, can we make some of this metaphorical so it does not have to be literal? Can we do a wheel and deal backstage so that these great trides and floods, can we work with you on this one to make some of it metaphorical to lift the pressure off of the literal? So that we can we die symbolically, to something lest we die from it, this whole kind of realm. But we'll say goodbye to Stormy in a moment, although I'll be tuning in tomorrow at 4 p.m. in my hotel room for sure. Just because, and the chart of that is intriguing too. It's, one plus Cancer overhead, Sailor lowers an old flag and raises another one. And I think it'll be interesting. And just, it's a rich kind of weekend. But just for the fun of it, we like, grand trine in water, Stormy. Mercury stationing in retrograde in Aries like it is now. There's a reset button thing kind of going on. We like the sun trine Uranus in Scorpio. That's my Venus. I feel I could get along with her very well. Which is soldier derelict in his duty because he can't report. So this is the unorthodox, trippy form of courtesan. And when I was, praising spicy vixen women last night, we go, right, all spicy vixen throughout time, this is a good thing. I'll tie this back into Neptune in a moment. But how many people here have seen the really fun movie Dangerous Beauty about Veronica Franco? Smattering. It's really good. It's historic, and so Veronica Franco was a great woman poet and courtesan in Venice. And see, the whole relationship of courtesans, nuns, hookers, is an important theme throughout history, because being a courtesan or a nun were the realms of most erotic autonomy, in much of history. But Veronica Franco, and it's not really a spoiler because the whole movie is fabulous, she's a courtesan against her will, but she's one of the very few women we know of who was accused of witchcraft by the Inquisition and who beat the rap. Okay? And the way she beats the rap is very Stormy Daniels. Right, she stands with her bosoms proud, haja, right, defiant in front of the Inquisition, and she says, "All my life, I have never surrendered to the worst fate that can befall a woman, which is to be of utter inconsequence." Brr, right, and it's her woofiness that inspires the otherwise cowardly men of Venice, all of whom she slept with, the mayor, the bishop, or whatever, to overcome their timidity and back her up. Right, causing the Inquisition to say the entire city of Venice is damned, and we're packing our bags and leaving. Right, causing the entire city of Venice to go carnival. There we go. Okay. To all spicy liberating vixens. To all spicy liberating vixens. So we go. Okay. Thank you very much, Stormy. And now, all right, we will. Well, with blessings. And again, may you play the role. Not, one of the things I say to myself over and over, and even put in my email sign-off, is better a trickster than a martyr be. This is all about the Neptunian-Piscean realm. The shadow, of course, of Pisces in the 12th house is martyrdom. We do want to address that. And as I said last night, the story about St. Patrick as a metabolizer of poison. Stormy Daniels, born on St. Patrick's Day, is a great metabolizer of poison. So we go to the pop culture. But we do want to protect her from inflation, right? Or harm. So better a trickster than a martyr be is the model for all of us, is that the martyr takes on the unmetabolized poison of family and culture into which we are all born, and goes, "I've taken on the unmetabolized poison of family and culture, and now I feel really horrible and I'm dead." The trickster, same impulse, takes on the unmetabolized poison, but does not presume to do it alone. Raises hand, invites in whatever you want to do, metabolizes the poison out of the wine, invites in whatever your favorite term is. I like, spirit of woof that animates the universe. I'm not fond of the word God myself, the divine, but really I go for woof. Or trickster, come on in. So he invites in what can metabolize the poison. Humans in collaborative cahoots. It's more than perfect that we humans cannot resolve these incredibly bad-mannered, sociopathic crises we've imposed on our kin by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. And so that's why, what I feel, is the renaissance of reverent ingenuity and animism, of humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius, is really the only way to go. So there's that. And so the trickster does not presume to do it by themselves, but again, same impulse, but invites in what can metabolize the poison. And as always, part of this language always says to us, cooperators are standing by, right? I mean, that there is, and that's really how we can think of the patterns and the planets and our availability. I love just to, you know, to honor the Saturn dynamic. Whoops, let me move this over here a little bit. You know, Saturn, it's a beautiful thing right now, right? The moon in Cancer, fierce protection of life, rising in the east where we are. Saturn opposite, setting in the west. At a beautiful Sabian, an angel carrying a harp. I go, I like that part of Saturn. And Saturn, you know, with a, it's sextiling her moon. Well, I don't really know her, where her moon is. But I like Saturn, you know, these wonderful words like craft, right? And I love the work of Max Dashu. I don't know if you know who she is. She's a fantastic woman scholar, a real scholar of paganism and witchcraft. And her, if you just Google her, Max Dashu, D-A-S-H-U, she's really great. I have her book, you know, Women and Paganism in Western Europe, you know, these years. And I've only read 50 pages of it, but we've gotten two radio shows out of it. It's so nutrient dense. You know, and she says the word craft really means power from dedication, right? And I think this is part of a Saturn dynamic. So we know witchcraft, but really just to use the word craft, astrology craft, writing craft, you know, political influence craft, you know, it's a great word to avail ourselves. And then, of course, I love the gerund liberating, you know, and a friend of mine, you know, had started studying, she loved parts of Christianity. And she called what she was up to liberating Christianity. And I love that because it means setting it free, but also deriving the intrinsically liberating qualities from it. So I love also just all of us putting liberating in front of our name, you know, liberating Caroline, liberating Robert Hand, liberating whatever, meaning, you know, the intrinsic qualities of our desire to be agents of liberation, but also setting us free, you know, at the same time. And I did notice, because I give a lot of courses through the Shift Network online, as well as having my own, you know, and it's an interesting, slightly outsourced Saturn, right? Because I don't know if you know, how many of you know the Shift Network, but they are mega marketers, right? And so the language of mega marketing of spiritual stuff gives me conniption fits. And I have to have my Scorpio Grand Wazir kind of advisor backstage going, steady, steady. They have, you know, they have get or done medicine. Because it's like, I, you know, and I go, are my high standards keeping me from making a living, I wonder? Anyway, but, you know, and so, but we get on pretty good because it is an amazing time. What they do is, you know, they have a 8 million person, you know, mailing list or something. So you put up with the marketing and, you know, and the language, and then they steal some of your. I hope they're not listening to this anyway. But then who shows up is people from all over the world. I mean, Australians are just mad about online kahooting. And so in the first course I did, I had friends of mine in Syria, you know, meeting with, you know, people from all across America and Australia and New Zealand. And I go, Syria, really? Because I would get this email in the middle of the class going, I'm hearing the call to prayer now in Damascus and I'm listening to your class. And I go, wow, you have internet? And she goes, it got better since the war. And it's like, oh, you know, okay. But it does, you know, bring a lot. But I did notice I had to do my own composting of rumpitude kind of dynamic. Whoops, I don't want to just be completely flibbity-jibbiting all my time here, but I can't help myself. Okay, so, and I noticed that they had, you know, I've given a number of courses called Liberating the Zodiac and Liberating these things, because I love it so much, and I work a lot with that powerful word. And then I noticed that they'd hoovered a bunch of my language, but also liberating, and stuck it in front of somebody's course that I happened to have the skinny and the dirt on, going, there is nothing liberating about that person. So I was like, and then I go, okay, all right, compost herumphitude. They've, you know, and at first I thought they've turned liberating into a bleeping brand. God. And I thought I might give a little funeral for the word liberating, going, oh, you've been such a good friend, but you've been branded, and now you're no use and forced into servitude to humorless marketing. Oh, God. And then I thought, no, by the power of Trickster, the word is stronger than the brand. Right? And according to Trickster, I go, very well, then, let it be true that whatever they stick liberating in front of, it really will liberate that. Trickster loves discrepancy. See, the trickster part of us loves discrepancy, you know, because where things don't match, you know, and I think of Saturn transits, and we will, you know, aspire to get to everything as well. But Saturn transits, in a way, are a deep convening of self-counsel, going, does my inner life and my outer structural circumstance match, right? And we're all working on this forever. And the degree to which it doesn't creates a tension, but it's a useful tension. Necessary for change, right? You know, and then we know what we're going for. We want to go for the feeling of, we wake up in the morning going, here's me, here's my life, there's the outer structure of my life, does it match? And, you know, it's a lifelong aspiration of going inward, outward, yes, which is kind of the definition of authenticity, which is the greatest of protections in all detective novels, going back to 231 BC, I'll be talking about that tomorrow. Authenticity is what keeps you safe in the underworld. But then, let's bring Saturn is quintiling Neptune now, right? They're in a great alliance. So, you know, the discrepancy, here's me, there's my life, does it match? And then the irritation, we go, excellent, let's think of that as a giant grain of sand in our giant oyster selves, going, from that discomfort, we're gonna make a bleeping pearl out of this thing, right? So again, it's the metaphor. And I realize that many of you have been hanging with me for some time, and many of you are like, what? So I have things, you know, like sourdough starters. So if you've heard it before, just chant along. But some of the stories that I carry, I just haven't found better exemplars, although the truth of them, I think, is everywhere. So I love that a spiritual woman teacher had been alienated from her grown-up son for a long time. And she grew weary of this, and she said, oh, you know, woof, send me a dream, right? And so she had a dream, and in the dream she saw her son with an octopus wrapped around his heart, right? So she didn't go into years of Jungian analysis, you know, whatever. She imagined in her mind's eye, shape-shifting into a dolphin that came and gently butted at the octopus around her son's heart until it let go and swam away in her mind's eye. And 20 minutes later, in real life, her son called and said, this is so silly, let's work things out. Right? So part of the efficacy of the dream world and the atmosphere world and the symbolic world with, you know, let us be pragmatic mystics, is if we have the right image, we can then shapeshift. See, and I'm wild about the Jupiter-Neptune trine, right? Again, everything's available. And we can talk about the shadow and everything like that, but that's the shadow so often, and I think the shadow also of Saturn, how it's described, is a description of not following the instructions, right? What happens when we pit our petty small will against the tidal pulse, right? So I love that story, a true story, because it gives us an enormous tool. And I just, of shape-shifting, you know, if we can imagine symbolically a circumstance, we can then effectively shape-shift into what might, without presumption or hubris, what might begin to address that. I think it is a confluencing of allies and a confluencing of mentors. And I had a great dream guide coach, ally, years ago, and she just got back in touch, and she's in one of my classes, and I go, that's so great. She lives way out in rural West Virginia. But what was genius in this Neptunian realm, whoops, I guess I'll say goodbye to Stormy for the moment. Okay, goodbye, Stormy. All right, there we go. Now we're just back to just us. But just for the fun of it, 10 plus Leo is now rising. I love that Sabian symbol. Children under an oak on an old swing, the borrowed traditions of all spiritual theater now available. They go, thank you, that's good. Donna, in our dream group, nobody could interpret anybody else's dream. That would be bad manners. I mean, there's a million ways to work with dreams, and they can all be valid. But she was a guide. And I like thinking of those of us who love this language as guides. And the whole reinvention of everything, including the shamanistic metaphors, is like, no, you're not going to get somebody's soul back for them, for God's sake. That's very priesty. You know, but to guide people to access their own autonomy, yes. And so the way Donna, people would tell their dream, and then she would guide them to tell the dream as though everything in the dream was them. And sometimes it was like sort of obvious, but sometimes you could just see somebody going on a deep inward revelatory journey, like, wow. So mundane thing. You know, somebody would say, I dreamt I ran into an old friend of mine, you know, on the street outside my house. And Donna would say, when's the last time you saw that person? And the person would say, oh, like 28 years ago when I was in college. So then she would guide them to go, I dreamed I ran into a part of myself I hadn't spoken to in 28 years at a time when I was learning. I go, ooh. And there was a woman there who dreamed about, you know, a large kind of, you know, semi-passive-aggressive hostile woman who dreamt about a tornado, and it took her a long time to say, I dreamt about the powerful, dynamic, dangerous, destructive parts of myself. But when she did, there was enormous relief, you know. So I liked taking that and encourage all of us to go, well, we're all in this dream together. So I think applying that to the news is really good, as though it's all one collective dream. Because then we're acknowledging our creative complicity, and I love the word complicity, not shame, not blame. It just means whatever's going on, we are contributing creative chi. And once we realize that, we have the freedom to withdraw, to inhale our creative chi back from an undesirable story, and exhale it into a better story. But so complicity, I think, is great, and the complicitous dream. So, you know, so when I began doing this some years back, there were, you know, KKK burning down black Christian churches in the South, and medium recently too. So how would we do that? We dreamed that the ignorant white Southern parts of ourselves were attacking the black spirituality beacon parts of ourselves. It gets interesting for our altars, because once you put it that way, then, you know, kitchen magic was always about symbolic affinity. You know, if something is grumpy, you put a drop of, you know, you have an altar, right, to represent these things. If somebody was grumpy, you put a little drop of honey to sweeten their hearts. If they're dangerous, you might put a little circle of cornmeal around them going, wuzza, wuzza, wuzza. You know, one might begin, you know, honoring the fantastic contribution of black Christian Southern spirituality. One of the greatest sayings that comes to us from black Christian spirituality is, there's no one we couldn't love if we really knew their story. It's a huge, worthy challenge, right? Because whenever I say that, people go, you know, Trump, Donald Cheney, you know, Dick Cheney, and I go, thank you for being a member of our team volunteering for that job. You know, but think about, you know, the beautiful Jupiter in Scorpio right now, retrograde, to retrieve, to go back deeply, the quality of story is so crucial. And it is making, you know, an exact 150-degree angle to Venus overhead right now, which is pretty great. And Venus's image is a woman carrying a precious veiled burden into the future, right? It's about fierce protection of life, you know, from emerging from stories of death. But also, here's the thing about those young adults, those powerful allies born in 2000-ish, you know, is that they were not afraid on the stage to say magic. They said, we are powerful, we are magic. And they repeated it, and we go, right, right, the backstage dynamic, you know, and also on the right side of history, wrong side of history. But these are living things. So there's that beautiful dynamic, so there. So the idea about Jupiter retrograde in Scorpio, I remember stationing at 23, and I can't completely remember if I put American Empire in my chart folder, but it's just a moment where I will explain it to you. It's a short point, but so there is actually a moment where American Empire kind of happens, and the guest I had last week, Stephen Kinzer, who's a grown-up kind of, you know, great reporter, historian. I don't always mention astrology on the radio show when I have grown-ups on who might be frightened, but I always have the chart there to guide me about what wants to be said, and I think this is also a useful skill for all of us too, meaning we should all be able to translate astrological language into useful English, right? I mean, and smuggle it across borders, right? And in that way, people go, oh, that makes a great sense, you know? Right. I was about to say something. It's a Neptune thing. Wait a minute. Does anybody?
Empire.
Thank you very much. Exactly. We've outsourced our brain. Thank you for being the part of my brain out there. So Stephen Kinzer, this reporter, said, you know, he wrote a book called True Flag, and it's the story of Mark Twain and Theodore Roosevelt and the beginnings of American empire. And it reminds us, right, and see, this is so connected to March for Our Lives right now, because there are huge movements brewing of intelligence as well, and, you know, rising up. So on June 15th, 1898, two things happened at the same time. There was a meeting in Boston in Faneuil Hall of really eloquent, from very diverse circumstances. Some were kind of fundamentalist Calvinist preachers, but they were on the right side, you know, in this time, talking about America's destiny as not to interfere with the freedom and democracy of other countries, not to be a colonizer, you know, going back to the founding fathers, going, no, we should never, ever do that. You know, and at the same time, Congress was meeting in Washington at the same time, going, ooh, Hawaii, the Philippines, Puerto Rico, onto Iran, when we could have all those things. And the Faneuil Hall meeting ended at 5 p.m., and Congress voted to become, for America to become an imperial tyrant in the world at 5 p.m. And what was rising then was 23 Scorpio. Right? So Jupiter stationing at 23 Scorpio goes, there's a bunch of things to revisit. And it was a good conversation. All of my radio shows are, you know, or the recent ones anyway, are available on the website, you know, online for free listen and podcast. You can download it. That was a pretty great historic one. And he was one of the, you know, medium few guests where I was happy to just kind of get out of his way and have him go, well, I'm good, because he had a lot to say. And history. What a good idea. History. God. You know, Americans are so, you know, when I travel to other countries, and even Bedouins in the Syrian desert knew more about American politics than most Americans I run into. And were more ironically, strategically savvy. Going, yeah, you put up with these things, you know, but it's not perfect, but then you work that, and that way you can do that thing, as opposed to the tantrum yoga that so often passes for progressiveness, you know, going, oh, you know, it's like, no, you work it. You know, magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything, not condone, but to spiral with it and go, where's the advantage? So there's that. So revisiting that, and then I also like us revisiting, you know, another guest mentioned that 4,000 years ago the Greeks pretty much got rid of animal deities and went for humans, and part of me goes, let's revisit that too. There's a whole number of realms to revisit, and again, each person, by our own affinity and uniqueness in the journey, you know, to go back, like, when did this start? You know, somebody asks the Buddha, by what is the world polluted, Shariputra? You know, going 500 BC. And he says, by greed is the world polluted, you know, and the emotional greed will turn into manifest corruption and disrespect for the beauty of nature. He said that in 500 BC. It's like, you know, so we are retrieving each by our affinity that, you know, and then I love the dynamic, you know, of, so even the Pluto square Uranus and the Jupiter in conjunct Uranus, to dive deeply and bring very old things alive in a fresh vernacular way and spiral them out there. I love quintiles as irresistibly eloquent, I love our chart for today because it's full of quintiles. The sun, pretty exact. The sun quintiles Pluto right now, and the moon quintiles Uranus. Moon quintiles Uranus. So the sun and moon are both in quintile to outer planets. Now, quintile is possibly the first objective thing I ever learned in astrology. When I was a little tiny person engaged in responsible drug use in Dr. Andy Weil's salon, where I was the kid who got to hang out with really smart people. It was a brief salon for a moment, and it was 1969-70, and we were all, you know, doing responsible government-issued entheogens, and reading Joseph Campbell and all kinds of things. And that's when I decided to become an astrologer, going, this will do, right? And then we were all diasporaed and flung into alienation and loneliness and have been missing the salon ever since. But it was really pretty cool. It was people clerking for the Supremes and people coming back from India and left-wing writers, and we were all tripping out, and Andy had a tank of nitrous in the bedroom and government-grade LSD, and it was a fine time. Anyway, so he did get paid to go around the world taking drugs. It was a tough job, but somebody had to do it. Part of what he distilled was there are no drug-free cultures, but there are cultures with no problems. And he said it's a Saturn-Neptune thing. He said the cultures with no problems, there's ritual. So here's your first caffeine drink when you're 12 and only in the morning, you know. And also whole plant. He said when you refine plants into a little white powder, it takes the part of the plant out of the alkaloid community, so it will only take you out of community. Sugar, heroin, morphine, crack, coca, a great ally, cocaine, a great poison. Everything real is symbolically resonant. So anyway, so off I went for whatever mysterious reason to London. I go, how do I become an astrologer? I'll go to London. What the hell? So at the age of 18, I hurtled myself into London. I went to Watkins Bookstore. I bought a cult spiritual guide to London. I go, I'm going to check out every crank organization here and study at the Astrological Lodge. And at the Astrological Lodge, quintiles were one of the first things we studied, a pretty rare 72-degree angle, and it's got to be, you know, within a degree or so to count. So I learned it as literary. It can be many things, right? We're learning forever. But so we would read authors, and if they had a particular texture of a kind of spicy, irresistible eloquence, we would then go check and look up their charts and see if they did, and go, ooh, they did, right? So we could feel this thing, right? So that's how I learned. But see, all of us, you know, we're all who brought what to this Renaissance. You know, people learn about different aspects or angles in different ways, and they bring that too. So I learned it as literary, and I make a point when I speak to people going, I learned it as literary. It might be many things. And here's my journey about quintiles. Quintiles to outer planets as well. And again, all of this, you know, meant to catalyze everybody's own unique dynamic research, you know. So the reason I love them as a potential, I mean, we see them in bad places, charts, and I mean, of course, bad people's charts and everything. But it is influential and quite eloquent. And the way I pitch it to myself and to others is it's the capacity to hold a true perception and to become like a tuning fork, meaning it hums in other people. So we don't have to convince somebody, you know, or to conquer them or persuade them or harangue them, or if you're an Aquarius rising, you can just overwhelm them with information, which people go, okay, can I go to bed now or pee privately? No, like, oh, okay, there's more things to say to you. So it's a capacity to hold a true perception and to become like a tuning fork, meaning it hums in them too. So it's a much longer lasting influence. It's as though somebody would say, oh, fill in your name, since you pointed my head that direction, I see that now, right? So it's really clean, as opposed to and see, the only channel I really like is Esther Hicks channeling Abraham, because her language is so fabulous. Anybody here know Esther Hicks? Her language is and she's kind of tricksterish, you know. So she said, we can't persuade anybody or convince anybody or argue anybody into anything. But the greatest gift we can give to ourselves or others is to see someone connected to their own wise autonomy. And it is such a good default setting, right? And I just invite everybody to put it in your invisible magic backpacks and take it away to test drive it, you know, in a hybrid. So I've used it even, you know, people talking incredibly loudly in back of one at a concert where I just loved it. You know, the music and the silences were so important. They're like, nee, nee, nee. So, right, so we could do the shh thing, right? But then everybody's disrupted, because then you're almost hoping for them to do it again, right? Right, and there's that tension and intermission or whatever. But I go, so not to do the shh, which is you're in a polarity thing, but to go, all right, I see those people connected to their wise, appropriate sense of manners and etiquette. They're like, quiet right down. Now, not always, but enough. I mean, I just want us to experiment. Remember, Uranus, I'm very big, I love the outer planets, and I love cooperating with them. And I love, you know, in keeping with Uranus, changing my mind. I was saying to Rob right beforehand, you know, I've been through many Uranus, I have a permanent Uranus transit, and as well as permanent Neptune, but recently, and then Uranus is just completed squaring my ascendant, descendant, and I go, it's not, I've been pitching it a little more simplistically and dramatically to other people with this transit. And I go, some of these things are subtle. And also, I always love for self and others, when you're looking at a transit, look at the natal relationship. It's why, you know, grand trines are challenging, because it's kind of low muscle tone, right? It's genius, but it's low muscle tone. And if you've got a kind of hard transit, it's like, whoa. So the way I, you know, I've been kind of working or thinking about the Uranus transit is going, right, there are changes, right? But it's, I am ready for some deep fundamental changes in my persona and way of being and, I mean, all kinds of things. So the way I usually kind of pitch Uranus, and I like part of this, and again, giving it to everybody or contributing to everybody to experiment, because Uranus is the principle of experimentation. Try stuff. You know, and metaphoric agility is an increasingly crucial, valuable skill. So I like, you know, saying Uranus says to all of us, you know, in particular realms of transit, and here it is overhead, pretty cool, at a fun degree, which is a person giving a speech, which let's see, it's a person with a large audience, you know, defies their expectations, right, or something like that. And we go, yeah, let's all be that. And in case you thought of something organized was going to happen here, okay, so so I like Uranus. First, I like Uranus. Its glyph is, you know, a little H with a circle drop below it. It's as though it is an ancient archaic jail key. Unlock yourself and pass it on. And the piece of Rumi that came out of Seattle in the battle for Seattle, you know, or it's Hafez actually, the small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman ducks under the moon and tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners, right? And so everybody feel free, regardless of extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignment, to put that as a secret middle name. You know, Robert tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoner's hand, right? Or wherever you want to do with that. And it also, see, it handles the martyrdom thing. So it says, our job is to toss a key. We don't have to dive in and put people's little hands around the key, you know, and whatever. And you go, here's a key. You can wear it as a necklace if you want. I recommend unlocking yourself and passing it on. But my job ends here with tossing you a key. Catch you later. There's also 28 plus Libra is got a great Sabian, which is men toiling in a dark pit. A woman calmly lowers a rope, right? And it's kind of like it's another, you know, yeah, that we just had this, you know, 3 minutes ago as our IC, it'll do. And I love that too, because it's like, oh, yoo-hoo, oh boys, toiling in a dark pit, here's a rope. I got stuff to do. Let me tie it to a tree. But the rope's here whenever you want to climb out. Meanwhile, we're going to go, you know, run the world. Okay, so those are useful dynamics. But so the way I think of Uranus is as though Uranus says, I'm going to connect each one to the coolest things possible, inwardly and outwardly. And all I want from you, humans, individually and collectively, is willingness. So I encourage myself and then work people I'm working with client-wise and stuff to just on their own, you know, kind of to experimentally, what the hell, accept the deal. Going, okay, trickster, Uranus, dynamic, whatever the coolest thing possible. Sure, I'm willing, right? And it's as though the backstage gods go, they've hoisted their sails of willingness. Let's go. Whew. So I like the all-encompassing metaphor, one of which is Neptune would say to all of us, we're at sea. Whoa. All of the outer planets that I love so much, Uranus, Neptune, and yes, Pluto, god damn it, is large by energetic symbolism, even if not by mass. But I think of them as, you know, metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. And in fact, I think of all gods and goddesses as metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. And they're reinventable. They are templates into which we invite power. And I also like, for the fun of it, saying, you know, the divine wants to be liberated from past confines of human imagination. The fun of it over there. But Neptune dissolves certainty. It says dissolution is the secret of the great work. Dissolve and solve a coagula. Dissolve and reimagine. So in Dancing with Neptune, see, it's a very not modern thing, although the modern world is changing because it's all coming apart, like a sandcastle and a spin cycle and a washing machine or something like that. Okay, but see, the modern world is kind of addicted to certainty, and as we know, certainty is a booby prize. So it's kind of like playing a game of musical chairs, and music stops, everybody scrambles for a chair. And see, all of us, we go, we never ever wanted to play musical chairs, you know, or heading into the woods, you know, and then to come back. But so in the ancient world, you know, not knowing was considered a fantastic accomplishment. You know, look, so-and-so has run out of certainty, now mystery can find them. You know, and the way I think of Neptune's sacrament is, if Uranus is, we're willing, Neptune is wonder. You know, which again is a mudra that turns our body into a beseeching, magnetizing chalice of inquiry, right? And when we put them together, it's kind of fun. We go, whatever we wonder about can then attract the lightning of insight. You know, I wonder what my next, whoa, okay. You know, it's a call and response intimacy dynamic. So Neptune says, well, in all these, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, I view as profoundly deconditioning from societal tyranny, right? So people's degree, I mean, and we know this operates on many levels, right? Pluto plays hardball, deaths do happen. But I also think of what wants to happen and how do we cooperate with these things. So, you know, a greater intimacy with the underworld, which means also mushrooms and mycelia. I recommend to myself, I'm having an exact Pluto transit now, I recommend to myself mushrooms, you know, mycelia, tonics, roots, you know, rhodiola root, sacred to the Asclepions that Chiron ran, ginger root, turmeric root, mycelia root, the mushrooms, you know, the rooting, do that underworld kind of dynamic. So Pluto, Uranus, and Neptune are deconditioning. It's like a bazillion years of spiritual psychotherapy in about an hour. Like, so some people like that, and some people are like, whoa, I liked my old identity. You know, and it's sort of like a DMT entheogenic trip. I liked my old identity, and it's like, what identity? What identity? And it's like, whoa, I know, no, okay. So I also, you know, there's a million metaphors that we all gather, again, individually. A friend of mine says you can also liken Pluto to the early design of jet engines. It gathers force from what it expels. You know, take that, and whew, whew. So there's many metaphors, but the Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, Jupiter, all-encompassing metaphor, Neptune would say, we're at sea, whoa, or just, you know, let's think of it customized, everybody here going, you're at sea, I'm at sea, but we have a boat, Saturn, it's a good little boat, I've been working on it for, you know, you can think of it as a Jupiter cycle, 12 years, or a Saturn cycle. We have a good little boat. And on the boat, there's a tiller that steers it, and that's our dedicated heart devotion steers this boat. And the winds are coming. Okay? I think of Jupiter and Uranus as sky gods, even though they're in fire and water signs, but sky gods, wind gods, huge things. So we hoist our big sail by the Uranus sail by being sure we're willing, we're hoisting ourselves a willingness. And the Jupiter sail, which kind of goes with that, is a smaller sail but really important. And in this detective realm, it says we hoist that sail by telling ourselves our own story, which is a very magic thing to do in fairy tales. When people get lost in the enchanted woods and Neptune and Pisces says dream work, fairy tale work, most practical thing, most practical way to interpret reality right now. In myriad forms, things that happened in fairy tales, really useful. So it says, well, to tell oneself one's own story, with perhaps an emphasis on 12 years ago. How did we all get here from 12 years? So one way I like to animate it for self and others is to say, whatever you wanted to do 12 years ago, it wasn't time, you weren't ready, culture wasn't yet receptive. Now you're ready, culture's receptive. sort of go, well, what have I been doing for 12 years, and how does it all want to come together? And certainly these big transits are also interested in combating the culture's confusion about age, right? It's like, because again, stories are so heartening. I see all these really kick butt, you know, men and women in their 80s going, another round of woof, and I go, go team, it's looking good, 96 is looking good, thank you, you know, that's good, you know, and for whatever reason we do these things, I go, yeah, my own, you know, economic trippy circumstance and procrastinating demons and stuff, I go, I have arranged it that the next 30 years of my life have to be the most productive. So it's like, I don't have to be, because I see, again, got to, is like, oh no, I'm a pathetic weenie in the face of a vast and caring universe, and I haven't been a financial grown-up at all. But see, the trickster goes, no, we get to do this thing. Oh, what a fun thing it is. Okay. So we hoist that sail also, and because Jupiter in Scorpio in Pluto's sign, you know, says, I will make each one of you, us, wealthy by your definition of wealth. And so it goes, define wealth, right? And Jupiter and Saturn are just, I think they're just coming out of their semi-square, but part of that is, The way I run charts and what I love is, you know, draw somebody's chart and go real map, symbolic map. And one of the things, it's a symbolic map of the interior community of you, the inner democracy. I like all the planets, okay? So I think a lifelong thing is to give to each planet, each part of our interior intelligence that connects us to an exterior intelligence, the work it does best. And I think Saturn is least understood. That Saturn is really good at setting intention, dedicating, defining things, taking vows. But Saturn's quite terrible at, how am I going to do that? That plunges us into alienation and depression, and we're a pathetic weenie in the face of a vast, you know, insurmountable. And see, I think Jupiter and Uranus chime in and go, we'll do the booking, we'll do how, you just tell us what. I mean, do common sense things, right? But you tell us what, Saturn, and we'll do how in a way that makes you bark with delight, right? So that's, you know, part of, I found this to be true, right? So Jupiter says, define wealth. We give it to Saturn. See, Saturn, he who hesitates gets bossed, right? So it's good to give Saturn work, or somebody else will impose their Saturn on us. Right? And very often when we're collaborating on a project, I've experienced this many times, you know, and I arrive not completely clear about what I'm going to do, you know, but the other person has a very clear idea of what they want, and it's a terrible idea, but they have a very emphatic idea, which then encourages us going, right, whose movie are we in? Right, I don't want to be in that person's movie, so it gives me the incentive to come up with my own thing. And then Jupiter also says, so define wealth, tell oneself what's no story of the last 12 years, but also Jupiter says, I'm going to make everything bigger, so whatever you don't want to take any further on this journey that's about to set forth, you know, whatever you've gotten all the good out of, you know, useful to put it into Pluto's conveniently proffered cauldron. And so we go, have we gotten all the good out of resentment? You know, that might be a good thing to lay to compost, right? And, you know, or any form of, oh, whaley, whaley, you know, tragic romantic melancholy, you know, I go, okay, so the medievals thought that melancholy was a sign of genius, so I say to the Neptunian Pisces 12th house part of all of us, you can have just as much melancholy as makes you a genius, but not more. Just a little, just a skosh, a little microdose of melancholy. And also a crucial thing that I work myself and with others, we go, expectation is the partner of disappointment. I knew that wouldn't go. All right, but willingness, see, the Uranus trickster thing, willingness is the dance partner of life. So it's a small verbal distinction, but a huge energy difference, right? I mean, you can kind of feel it. Like if you go to a party going, oh, I'm going to go meet a cute guy. So to go expecting is to carry around a portable prison for self and others. To go willing, like willing with all of its double entendre, like intending and hey, you know, is to be an agent of liberating freedom. You know? So Jupiter thinks it would be witty if all of us right now, because why not do little increments of magic since we're together and bless the world and all, if we were willing to toss into Pluto's cauldron all past, present, and future expectation and its consequent disappointment. And it's like, wow, think of the energy we'd all have. I mean, is that a fun idea? So just for the fun of it, the great Yoruba word ashe, which means may the metaphor and the words incarnate into actuality. So we go, we are willing to toss into Pluto's cauldron all past, present, and future expectation and its consequent disappointment. Ashe. And ladle out willingness. Ashe. Ah, that's very good. Okay, very good. So we're disappointment proof. Because, which is a huge, nothing can stop us now. Because also remember when, Obama was elected and the north node of the moon was at 23 Scorpio on his inauguration, right? Now we're back to 23 again, the humming and the resonance is everywhere. And aside from today, with 500,000, just dynamic, fabulous people to protect life and to be agents of peace and to realize the dream in a practical way, This is the equal atmospheric resonance to Obama's first inauguration. Because regardless of how disappointed people became, that was magic. And this today was equal. The atmosphere and the women's gathering. Three things. Right? Obama's first inauguration, the women's gathering on January 23rd last year, which was amazing, and this gathering today of 500,000. These, I grew up in D.C. and the Stones were happy, right, at these three occasions. And the atmosphere was one of convivial, increased synchronicity. The right person, the right conversation, the police were really behaved, just everything. So these three things of gathering. See, it's different. I mean, I grew up also as a little tiny, war protester, although I want to park that word somewhere. Protector. I prefer the Standing Rock saying we are protectors. But those were all kind of grumpy, like, and there was a fair amount of unmetabolized anger and poison and tantrum yoga in that kind of, and the ridiculous, breaking windows with stone, anyway, so that was good, but these were celebrations of incredible, powerful magic. First Obama, inauguration, the women's gathering, and today. It was so strong in its kinship, and that beautiful thing. So there. And whatever else I was going to say. Let me finish the metaphor. That's right, I threw this up several miles back, and here it is again. So the value of the metaphor is we don't have to create the ocean, the boat, the tiller, or the wind. We want to see ourselves, each person, wizard and witch, captain of their own boat. Wait, what does that say?
15.
How exciting. Okay, 15 minutes. We want to see each other and ourselves, captain, Saturn, captain of our boat, hand on tiller of our heart's desire, sails up, laughing, ha ha, right? And see who else is riding this wave, right? And so it's I find that a useful, all-encompassing kind of a metaphor for the Neptune-Uranus-Jupiter transits in some form. But again, to be able to see it, and also by seeing it, it goes into the memosphere to encourage others, to be autonomous as well. The tradition of a metaphor for each degree of the zodiac goes back to ancient Egypt. The Sabian symbols were just invented by two people, Mark Edmund Jones and Elsie Wheeler, and then kind of reworked and stuff. So I think it's part of the larger frame of this language that we love. Whatever language we study is how synchronicity will speak to us. So I know some of them quite a lot, right, because they come up a lot. I like the chart of America derived from the back of a $100 bill with a time on it for, I think it's 2:25 p.m., clock tower on the back of the $100 bill that gives nine plus Scorpio rising. I love that one. Other people are like, no, Gemini rising, Sagittarius. And it's like, they're all useful. Yeah. But for me, nine Scorpio speaks to me over and over again. So the first time I realized there was something objective, and some of the Sabian symbols, I'm like, I don't know. But years and years ago, early in my practice, I was about to do a reading for someone, and I noticed that there was just a very powerful transit that day, I think it was 10 plus, no, I can't remember, but I know the image for it was a drowning man is released. And I said to the man, I go, this is a powerful symbol that's exact today. Does that mean anything to you? And he was like, he goes, well, I almost canceled our appointment because my father died of emphysema last night. And he was drowning, but so was I. We were both the drowning man. I go, ooh, where you get little goosebumps going, ooh, this is real, okay? And sometimes it's very literal, you know, and sometimes metaphoric. And again, I think we want, you know, it's like the backstage gods are like, you know, we gave you a little orange con man with horns, you know, how much more literal do we have to make it for you humans? You know, it's like, oh, just make it so simple. You know, again, on many levels of metaphoricness, yes, does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
And then people, you know, and then there's people who make up their own. Although it's an interest, we can all make them up. Yes, here comes my inner harumphatutus self. Meaning, yeah, it's an interesting issue about scholarship and free range. Saturn and Uranus, right? And so part of me sort of thinks you can break the rules once you know them. You know, like people who go, I'm going to make my own tarot cards. And I go, in some way going, or we're going to make up Sabine symbols. And it's not to say that I'm right about anything, but it's like James Joyce could really write, so he could unwrite. Picasso could really draw and paint, so he could unpaint. And people who come along and imitate their end process, there's no power to it. Right, they're imitating the image. So there's a little bit of that kind of a thing. But we go right, and also, who's to say that people can't tap into the originating stream that, you know, Elsie Wheeler and Mark Edmund Jones did? So I've seen actual fistfights among Sabian scholars. You know, they go, oh, no, you can't change that one. And you know, so there was a pretty great Sabian study group in Washington D.C. of real scholars. I mean, who really, you know, were tracking it back to Egypt and working through the whole history of the thing and everything. You know, and I still use the little hand-printed books they made. And Steve Eardley, who calls himself Martin Goldsmith, who's written some interesting things. And some of his Sabian switches are really good sometimes, right? But I actually saw people throw chairs at each other and go, no, you cannot change that one. No. For instance, 22 plus Pisces is the original one gun from the 20s is a materializing medium at a seance. And Eardley changed it to a ventriloquist with a wooden dummy entertains the crowd, which is a little more contained, but it is Karl Rove's moon, right? And Dick Cheney's North Node, ventriloquist with a wooden dummy entertains the crowd. So it was perfect for that moment, right? It was like, that really works. You know, and there's a couple of others. 22 plus Sagittarius, Eardley changed it also a long time ago, not in accord with, you know, whatever. 22 plus Sagittarius, which was immigrants arriving, he changed it to the crown and torch of the Statue of Liberty, the necessity to defend democracy from tyranny. It's James Comey's Venus, right? Or I can't remember, maybe it's his son, but something at that degree, reminding us that, you know, people operate on multiple levels, and part of the strategy of this beautiful language is, again, whatever we speak to in somebody is the part of them we're inviting to dance, right? So I also talk to a lot of whistleblowers and people who are in the NSA or in the CIA and who then leave, you know, and have many scouting reports to report, and I'll talk about more of that tomorrow. But, you know, but some people, whistleblower comes on and goes, you know, James Comey, I mean, people are making friends with all these guys, you know, Mueller is no friend of democracy, really, and neither is Comey or whatever, and we go, we'll take what we can get, the right angle of relating. People, you know, it's like the great movie 7 Days in May. When things become so toxic, certain people who are on the wrong team go, I've got to switch teams, which is a major underworld myth and detective novel theme. People, and we want to be not going, well, you did bad things. And it's like, no, welcome aboard. Welcome aboard, everybody. So we speak to that part of, you know, the Comey part or whatever. So, yeah. So, no, it's a beautiful, complex thing. I get grumpy when I see some people's made-up tarot cards or Sabian symbols when they... It depends on where it's coming from, right? If it's coming from an essence place or a deriving status place. And also if they resonate. You know, and I think with tarot cards, I go back to tradition, and then there's some great modern versions. You know, but some of the modern versions are kind of like, what has the grail? Like the Mother Peace deck, I think, really had the grail in the early 80s, and then... Now I get nothing from it. We don't have to create cultural movements. The idea is that these things are blowing through the world. And I think Uranus and Taurus is a kind of democratic animism. Earth's not waiting for humans. You know, but if we want to be part of the collaborative team, we can, but it's like, and the whole idea of, you know, earth democracy and, you know, democratic animism and the rising up of the positive sleeper cells of the 60s and the people born in the year 2000 and the Parkland youth and all of that's humming away. There was also Planet at 23 Scorpio and the Valentine's Day massacre of Parkland and other things as well humming. But so these things are moving, and it's our job to put up our sails, right, and get our little boats ready, and heave dead weight overboard or into the compost. You know, what have we gotten all the good out of? You know, resentment. Neurolinguists have found that when we learn new words, it stimulates the same portion of our brain as sex. Woohoo! You know, which is kind of a Jupiter Scorpio thing. Learning stuff. You know, a wonderful woman also said that she made puzzles, and that when people are wired up, when people put a puzzle piece in place, it also gives the brain a little orgasm. Like, oh, we love that. New words and puzzle pieces are like, so I know Dimitri George is hilarious and fabulously vast and knowledgeable and uses about 100 asteroids and goes, there's an asteroid Caroline Casey, and there's a, you know, it's like, wow. I'm wary about, you know, new vocabulary, just but I've embraced Eris. I'm all up for Eris, way out there in the Kuiper Belt, it's not showing on this one, but anyway, but she's at about 22 Aries, goddess of disruption. She's hanging out 500-year orbit, but I like that, and it's also part of our strategy. I will aspire to come back to your question. It's part of our strategy about cooperating with everything. Magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything. You know, going, who's a good disruptive force? Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Swoosh. Go disrupt, you know, inauthenticity. Go disrupt the polluting industries. There you go. Whizz. You know, I mean, again, experimentally, without status, without hubris, just going, whoosh. You know, dealing with everything like it's a wise, wolfy, coyote dog. So the asteroids, it depends. You know, it's, again, all of us. I have great friends who also were part of an asteroid study group who taught me a lot. I think Vesta is intriguing. My friend, I have friends in the astrological community. I have, you know, friends who their whole thing is Chiron. Sometimes a little over the top. Everything like, oh, I have a cavity. That's Chiron. But you know, oh, I had a fight with my mother. That's Chiron too. I have a friend who's completely dedicated to Vesta, right? And it's simple. Again, we take it back. Flame glyph, Hestia. She says, wherever Vesta is where we are divested, denied, delayed the orthodox expression of that sign and that house while it's more deeply dedicated. And that really works for me. And even when I speak to myself or other people about that, I just use that. You know, and sometimes do not impose a further interpretation on somebody, but go, does that resonate? And they go, oh, yeah. You know, and so Vesta, you know, wherever it is, I find that a really useful, just even kind of incantational thing. Wherever Vesta is where we are divested, while the desire to keep the community flame is deepened. And that works pretty well. So I use the four plus Chiron. I'm very big on Chiron, although not the wounded healer part. Okay. There's Chiron at 28 plus Pisces, part of this whole new moon thing. Juno. Well, again, a friend of mine said, you know, I have Juno in the first house. And she goes, well, you're quite Juno-esque, right? Which, and again, tracking everything back before it got tamed or hoodwinked or bamboozled. So Juno, rather than the jealous wife, you know, berating, again, another friend says, you know, before that, Juno was some berating, but she was the voice of the law, kind of cosmic law and order, of people being responsible participants in the community. So I kind of go with that. Pallas Athena, I like, again, just from the symbol. It's a diamond on a cross. It's about prismatic perspective, being able to hold something up to the light and turn it around. You know, in May of 2000, because I'm kind of picking that beginning date for the Parkland youth, dragons, year 2000 dragon people, and then Saturn-Jupiter conjunction in Taurus with three other planets in May. It was a stellium in Taurus. With a quintile to Pallas Athena, all humming right now too, going, they are really good at prismatic perspective. Those articulate, incredibly like focused, strong, charismatic. Some of them read poems on the podium, and they were good poems. Like, it's amazing. They weren't bad impositional poems. These were true offerings and gifts of such profundity, really. So, yeah, Ceres Demeter, wild about Ceres Demeter, the same grumpy astronomers who demoted Pluto, elevated Ceres Demeter to a dwarf planet, goddess of the Earth, presider over the Eleusinian mysteries, so I often look to her. I like that a lot. So I work with Ceres Demeter. Again, all according to our interpretation, you know, if it's a powerfully configured or a transit or whatever. Where he's wounded is where he can heal. That's sort of the beginning part. But people stop there, which is... So it's not nothing that he can metabolize poison. But there were more temples to Chiron in antiquity than almost any other deity, but we know so little. So Chiron, the way Dale explained it to me, Chiron is the first Western mythological mentor. He's a centaur. He's a centaur mentor. As my friend Steve Ehrman quips, going to take a centaur mentor journey. So he's a centaur mentor. I know it's terrible. That's why I'm quoting it. So the rest of his family are drunken, crazy alcoholics, but he's really together. And he starts a school for future cultural heroes. There are many beings in his school. He does not care about status. Some of them are famous, some not. He teaches Orpheus how to play the lute. He teaches Asclepius how to be the Greek god of healing. So in antiquity, healing and art are one thing. Ancient mind peers into modern mind and goes, what are you modern humans talking about? That there's hospitals and art galleries, healing and art, and neither are very good. Well, what do you mean? You can't have one without the other. What are you modern people talking about? And in many of us here, you know, this resonance says, of course, healing and art go together. So Chiron, for our purposes right now, well, part of the trickster dynamic of that is that Chiron's students, he's getting them ready for their contribution to the world. It's kind of, you know, what we're all doing here. And their tasks are impossible, right? And they're always successful after they studied with Chiron. So in Chiron's mythology, to be underestimated is considered a very positive strategic value. Because if you're going to pull off something against all odds, might as well be underestimated. So I like this when people go, nobody takes me very seriously. We go, that's excellent. You get into Chiron's school. How fortunate for you. See, again, cooperate with everything, not whaley-whaley. It's like, oh, that's very good. So then he goes on a journey, and he goes throughout the Mediterranean and Turkey, and he founds these Asclepions. I've been to one on Kos, the ruins there. Apparently the one at Ephesus, they keep the dream incubation chambers going. I'd like to go. But we know some things at the Asclepions. People would go there, and there are people who know far more than I. This is my little working thing since you asked. So we do know some things. People would go there. These are cultural centers of intentional dreaming, healing, and theater. And people would go there at a conundrum time, and they would drink rhodiola root tea, right? The Eleusinian mysteries, people were definitely tripping on a kind of LSD, ergot, mushroom combo thing. And they all had a shared vision. The Asclepions, no, not entheogenic. The rhodiola root tea, which is a lovely adaptogenic root. You can get it easily. It's been used for over 2,500 years, you know. It's one of those adaptogens that whatever is out of balance, it brings it into balance. If your blood pressure is high, it lowers it. If your blood pressure is low, it raises it, right? So people would drink rhodiola root tea just to come into balance, and then they would intend to have a healing dream. They'd have a healing dream because we have records. And then here's the wheel and deal trickster thing. If you give me a dream, not only will I follow its directions, but I will give it artful expression. So each person would have a healing dream, but to access its power, they would participate in a play, make music, write a poem, something that artfully expressed that dream, and then they would have the power of their vision, and they'd go back to their communities as seed Renaissance people. So we say, well, the Asclepions want to come back into the world, and they don't have to look like what they looked like. They could look like a NORAD, you know, conference. Here we are, gathering, incubating our dreams, our waking and our sleeping dreams, you know, to go back into the community as seed Renaissance people. May it be so. It's So that's the brief skinny of how I like to work with Chiron. But that's why when people go, oh, the wounded healer, and I'm so wounded, and therefore I'm a great healer, it's like, because I like being a little coyote-ish. I like having lived with an animal that bit me. I liked it. And whatever I would worry about, like, well, what will I do when you die because you're my closest friend? And she'd bite me. She'd go, cut that out. You know, and I go, and what will I do with your beautiful body? Do I bury it or cremate it? She'd bite me. Cut, you know, not to cause permanent nerve damage, but enough to get my attention. I go, thank you. Snap out of it. Snap out of it. You'll know when it comes, which is a kind of a death thing. You know, I mean, when her death came, it's like we all knew what to do. I mean, she and I, it's like, right. So, in, you know, another thing to throw into Pluto's cauldron that we might not want to take with us is the anticipatory dread. You know, let's heave anticipatory dread into the cauldron, you know, and the five-year fear planner. The fear is we fear that we're going to fear far into the future. Yeah, because a lot of times, I don't know, you know, clients will say, oh, that's great, but what about in 2023 when Pluto makes a semi-quintile to sextile to my whatever? It's like, if you didn't know astrology, would you be worried? And they're like, no. I go,